Welcome to another edition of the podcast we call The Corner Store. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. In the building, as always, is Max Snacktor in a bright orange hoodie, looking like something that would deter traffic in a positive way. You know, Max is always kind of directing the flow of the show in some way, so it's appropriate. Mercedes Zapata is flicking as we speak, and DJ Cashier has set us up to succeed. It is shitty outside in the city of Chicago, and I just returned from Pittsburgh today and flew into what looked like was going to be a decent day and is, you know, just that kind of shitty cold rain, which I'd just rather it legit snow. But the in-between is kind of what is perturbing. But that's neither here nor there. I'm excited because we have a really brilliant, fine artist as our guest today. Someone whose work I've admired now for a few since I started to see it on IG. But I know that she is showing all over the city and I think beyond. And I'm excited to talk with her because I have a theory about some of the influences. But we have Kirsten Valentine in the building. Welcome to The Corner Store.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being here. You know, before we begin, Max always secures our guests some snacks, and so today is no different. We have for you some Pepperidge Farm Chessmen Minis. They're sweet and simple cookies, but they are delicious. Those are good cookies, so please feel free to enjoy now or later if you wish. Also, in addition, Max got for you a antioxidant infusion. It's a Ipanema pomegranate. I don't know what flavor that is. Not a lot of sugar in here, though.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, good. And thanks for coming. I'm glad you're feeling a little better than you were. You were under the weather about a week or so ago.
Yeah, I was sick. Most of the people I know had the flu, and I thought I had escaped it, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So.
Yeah, that's rough. Now, do you have cure-alls for those moments?
I believe that, like, the more medications you take, you know, the less your body builds up immunities to things. So I try not to take anything. I think the best thing to do is just get as much rest as possible.
Yeah.
But if I have to be functional, Sudafed. Because it wakes you up and clears you up. And there's like a decongestant coughing one. I can't even remember what it's called, but. Yeah, generally, I think you suffer through it, drink a lot of water, get a lot of rest, and that's the way to go.
Yeah, because usually people are just run down, right? Which is why folks get sick, I think.
Yeah.
Like, we just run around like idiots, kind of all of us.
Yeah.
And we interact with so much in the world that probably can, you know, is contagious and could fuck us up, especially if we don't take care of our bodies.
And I had just been traveling, and that never helps with getting sick.
Where were you?
I was in France. I visited some friends in Lyon and traveled around that area a little bit, and then went up to Paris. I was there for about a week.
Okay, and when you were there, are you working? Is this just to travel? What's
Well, it was a trip with my husband and a buddy. So the first half of the trip, I did a bunch of wine stuff. My day job is with wine. So I went around and visited a bunch of wineries in the Rhone Valley. And then in Paris, met up with some artists, did some studio visits, and saw a bunch of really amazing shows. There was a Da Vinci retrospective that caught the tail end of, that was like the largest exhibition of his work ever in history, and it was just amazing at the Louvre, you know, for the 500th anniversary of his death.
They were pulling out all stops.
Yeah, it was amazing.
That's pretty spectacular.
It was incredible to see.
Yeah. Now we'll get into your art, your work, but your day gig is with wine.
Yeah. So I am I'm the cellar master for a couple of restaurants. So basically, like, I waited tables for years and years. I got more passionate about wine, you know, took a bunch of tests and certifications, became a certified sommelier.
And you pronounce it sommelier?
Sommelier.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
right, or just psalm.
Psalm, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And got a job as a wine director and found myself working 70-hour weeks and, you know, just like completely exhausted, no time for anything else. And so I took a job as a cellar assistant that was originally 2 days a week and just kind of like expanded over time. So like, I mean, today I was in, you know, three different restaurants, just kind of like doing everything behind the scenes to make sure that like everything runs smoothly during service. So wow. Making sure that like everything is stocked and organized and that the menus actually represent what we have in house. And yeah.
Did you always have a pretty refined palate, or did it come to you one day where you're
no,
like, oh shit, I can taste.
I, some people are really natural tasters. I've really had to work at it.
Does that just mean you drank a lot, or what is that?
Like? No, I mean, like there are specific ways that you can like study wine. Like one of the things is like one of the tricks that I did, because like a lot of, what you're looking for in wine, you're looking for like kind of like fruit characters. And so what you can do is take actual fruit, little cups, and then pour like some, you know, cheap red or white wine in with them and kind of let it sit for a while, like an hour in the fridge, and like let the cherries or strawberries or whatever like sit in there. And then you take the fruit out and then you smell it like kind of infused into the wine, and you're like, oh, right, okay, so that's what green pepper smells like in a red wine. That's what, you know, that's what blackberry smells like in a red wine.
Wow, so you did that to develop your palate.
Yeah, so that's one of the exercises that I've done. But there is a lot of like tasting, but like most of the time when you're like tasting through wines, like seriously to evaluate them and to educate yourself, you're actually spitting them out.
Right, yeah.
So,
which is kind of gross.
Oh, it's totally gross.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely gross. We know how gross it
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You like go to these like fancy tasting events and it'll be like this like beautiful ballroom, and like every little table there's like a little metal bucket and just like everybody's spitting into it. And it's just this like gross mix of like, you know, foamy spit and like wine.
Yeah. I worked at a French bistro who had a sommelier, and so he at the end of the night would kind of sit me at the end of the bar and mm-hmm. educate me about the wine that they had in the restaurant, and he didn't make me spit it out. I was able to just drink.
I mean, if it's at the
preferred,
end of the night.
It was preferred. Yeah. But I love that image of you teaching yourself to build your palate that way. It's like, I feel like that's it must be a very old school way to do that. You know, it's like, I feel like it's like Rocky training with Mickey early on, where he's like in, you know, he's like just DIY ways of kind of getting
and it's very kind of like you know, it's almost like a guild where like when you start like studying wine, like there are, you know, kind of different institutions that, you know, that give certifications and exams and stuff, but like it's really just like a network of people. So like I have had certain mentors, and you know, I've found myself acting in some ways as a mentor for other people, but like it's really kind of like, you know, like an education that's passed on from like one generation to the next, like people teaching each other, like, you know, the tricks and the sort of foundations. And
because it's its own its own craft. Really beautiful. Not that I wanted to talk about this at all, but I'm glad we are. Would there be like very affordable bottles that folks could go to the store that you think are just decent to get for like the average, you know, drunkard that might be listening to the show that might want to get something that is, you know, not too top shelf, but you think is just delicious?
Some of my favorite wines that are like reasonably priced are Scherer. They're made by this guy Fred Scherer in Sonoma in California. He makes absolutely gorgeous Pinot Noirs. He makes his Infandel that is fantastic. Like you think of these kind of like heavy, like inky Zinfandels, like overly fruity. His is absolutely beautiful. He's kind of like a mad scientist in his approach. He's like really like, you know, intensely involved, like, you know, using technology to like measure the sugar levels and everything before he picks. He's really phenomenal. And what else can be like reasonably priced that you can find?
That's a good one. How do you spell it?
Scherer, Scherrer.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that tip. Now, that's not why you're here at all.
No.
You're an incredible visual artist. You're a beautiful painter. I love your work. Max loves your work. I mean, this, you know, we're big fans. How did you get started?
I mean, I just always drew. I was just always like, you know, really like fascinated with drawing. And when I, you know, when I was really young, I was exposed to Da Vinci. And one of the things that he talked about in his notebooks was that it's better to, you know, work from like, from life or from a bad sculpture than it is to work from like the greatest painting. So I always tried to work from things that are, you know, like three dimensional. So like when I was in, you know, second grade, I'd be like, you're supposed to be like taking notes or like writing some paper in class. And I'd just be like drawing my hand in different positions, or like kids in my class would like sneak over and I'd like draw their portraits and the teacher would get mad. And then when I took some, outside courses. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and the art college there, the Columbus College of Art and Design, had probably still have Saturday morning programs, and you could get like a scholarship for it. And so I would go to those, and it was one of my teachers there who started me using oil paints. And I think I was 14 or 15, so really young.
Wow.
And most people don't really start using oil till college, so.
Right, yeah. That's because it's a much more difficult material to be able to use. What do your folks do?
Well, I was mostly raised by my mom's parents. They were both nurses. My mother passed away a few years ago.
Okay, so, I'm sorry to hear that. Now, what did they think about your, you know, kind of following this path toward art, or did they not know, or at what point did they know?
No, I mean, they were encouraging as far as like, you know, going to like classes and stuff. You know, they didn't really they never pushed me to pursue any other type of career. They were never like, you need to be a doctor or a lawyer. It was just like, all right, you want to do this, do that.
Okay, well, that's really good
to
hear. So you're 14, 15, mm-hmm. you're in Columbus, Ohio, you're mm-hmm. going, so did you followed this through high school?
Yeah. Actually, I did really badly in all of my high school art classes.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because like all of the assignments would be like about like branching out and like doing different things. Like, you know, this week we're going to do a photography project and this week we're going to do something with clay. And I was like, no, I just want to draw and paint. Right. I'm not interested in any of that stuff. And so like, you know, I would just end up trying to turn every project into what I wanted to do rather than like, you know, the teacher's like, no, we're exploring new things, you know, opening up new horizons. And like, no, I'm not doing that. Just doing my thing.
It's interesting because I think high school in its ideal sense is to kind of get kids excited about something,
mm-hmm.
but it isn't for kids who are already excited about something.
Yeah.
You know, you found at a young age something that has been a passion, you know, your calling perhaps, and you followed that. But high school is not meant, they don't know what to do with those kinds of students, I feel like.
Yeah, and I was definitely ornery.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You got in some trouble, you gave lip back to the teachers.
Yeah, I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and you know, it wasn't really open to a lot of input from anyone.
So then where were you getting your education, if not in formal school? It was maybe in the Saturday program.
Yeah, so there were the Saturday programs, which were, it was very kind of like traditional in the way they approached education. It was a lot of, you know, still life drawing, you know, working with charcoal, you know, working in, you know, very, very focused ways. So it was really like a big contrast to what was going on in my actual high school, because that was kind of like, it's an art class for anybody. The Saturday program, it was like, this is an art class for like people who want to do art. You know, so it was a different focus. Yeah. And that I absolutely loved.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you did that throughout your high school career.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. And you're in Columbus, Ohio, which is a great city. I love Midwest cities,
uh-huh.
you know, and I just got back from Pittsburgh. There's a lot of shared shit between Chicago and Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and I think Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and Columbus is a little different. But did you have friends there that were also artists coming up? Were you part of a larger artistic community or?
No, not really. the more I would say my school had a really excellent theater program and choir program, so it was more kind of people who were in those areas, you know. My husband, I married a guy I met in high school. We didn't date at the time,
but we met him in high school.
Wow. Yeah. But he actually started up like a poetry reading group that we would do outside of school. So like that was kind of more my group of peers, was like, you know, poetry, theater kids, but there wasn't really anybody who was like seriously into visual art.
So that's interesting. You met your husband. Yeah. Now you were part of that poetry group that he started?
Yes.
So y'all were cool. You knew each other.
What happened?
What do you mean?
We were a bunch of dorks reading poetry, like getting together and like writing our poems. And we used to, because we were 16, we just discovered the beat. So like instead of clapping at the end of a poem, we would like snap.
Yeah, of course.
We were so pretentious. It was great.
So you have been friends since that time.
Well, we were like kind of friends, more acquaintances in high school. It was after graduation when we were both in college, like ran into each other again. I was working at a coffee shop and he was living in an apartment like a block away, and I'd give him free coffee.
That was the trick. Okay. Where did you go to college?
I went to CCAD, the Columbus College of Art and Design, but only for a year.
So. Okay. And then what happened?
It was a financial thing that led to me dropping out. And then, just kind of screwed around for a while. I left Columbus for a while and moved to Madison, Wisconsin, another awesome Midwestern city.
Yeah.
Moved back to Columbus and then moved to New York and was there for a couple years. Was living in Greenpoint, which at that point was a mix of like hipsters and Polish people. And now it's just like super condos, the landlord basically told us that our rent was going to go through the roof, that they were selling the building, and so we're like, all right, what's another city like? What do we need? And we're like, well, we need a city that like has a population of at least 1 million, that's near a large body of water, because really like having the ocean there, and has like a public transportation system, because I don't drive. And like art, some kind of like art scene. And we're like, I think that's Chicago. I think like the one city that like ticks off every one of those is Chicago.
Nice.
So we moved here and
in what year?
Love the city. 2008, 2009. Yeah.
It's
been a while.
It's been treating you well?
Yeah. I love the city.
Is it home now?
It's definitely home. Yeah.
So at what point then in all this moving around, or at what point in your life did you know you were going to follow the desire, passion to draw, to paint? When did you know that was going to be kind of your thing?
Just always.
Always.
I decided, like, I don't know, when I was in like kindergarten that I was going to be an artist. I was obsessed with this book. My name is Asher Lev.
Yeah, a
novel.
Yeah. Talk.
About a little boy who wants to be an artist. And, like all of the struggles that he goes through with that. And I was like, yeah, that's the life I want. I want a life of like, like struggling and fighting and poverty and misery to make my art. And
that's the lie about all those great coming of age novels that I also was taken by as a kid. But they don't tell you like, oh, maybe you're going to want to pay rent and shit like this.
You realize that later. That does become an issue at a certain point. But yeah, dreams of living in a garret, like that.
I want to talk about your work. Before I do, can you give out your socials? So as we're talking, maybe people also will have the visual components.
I'm mostly just on Instagram. So it's just my name, just Kirsten Valentine, one word, all lowercase. And then my website is also kirstenvalentine.com.
Thank you. So, let's talk about your work. I mean, I'm taken with it. What are the ways you describe it?
The first thing I would say about my work is that it's unfinished. Everything is kind of left in a state of unfinishedness. So like I have, you know, very realistic components to it, and then parts that are just left completely blank or parts that are kind of scribbled in, and it's finding a balance between those components.
Yeah, so that is interesting, because in one sense it is, yeah, very real, almost like, you know, photographically real, and then there's so much space in, mm-hmm. in the composition. It reminds me, and I don't know, this is my theory. You mentioned, and I'm curious who you've been influenced by. You mentioned Da Vinci, but it does remind me a little of some of Cezanne's portraits, particularly some that he left intentionally unfinished, like the card player, you know, which is one of my favorite portraits, in part because of the beats. And Ginsberg loved Cezanne and was taken with him and that painting in particular. But you get a lot of these. The paintings are of people in familial spaces, it seems, or backyards, or, you know, kind of solo sometimes too, but they seem in familiar environments. And so one, I guess I wonder, Cezanne, is that tracking?
I mean, I absolutely love Cezanne. I'm very flattered that you find any commonalities in my work with his. I think he's extraordinary.
You know, the card player?
Yeah.
There's something there between, you know, that, cause like that whole, like right hand corner is just white.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's something that always fascinated me, like these unfinished paintings. Like, there's one, I'm forgetting what it's, but it's like an early American painting, and it's like the signing of the treaty of something, and it's like Benjamin Franklin and a bunch of other guys all sitting around, and like it's like half finished. So like you have these like parts that are like perfectly done, and then just like, you know, kind of just a loose mess. And
Larry Rivers would do that too.
Yeah, I love Larry Rivers. Yeah, he's great.
He is great.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah. Larry Rivers is. My uncle was married to his daughter.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
For a period of time, and so my goddaughter is her daughter, and I knew Larry before he passed, and you know, of course, was out of his mind, but. Had a similar thing at times where he would do hyper real.
Yeah, he balanced it really, really well, and his work is really expressive. And I like the way that he'll use, you know, like repetition in his images. Like there's the series of portraits of Napoleon.
Yeah,
where it's like there'll be like kind of like three iterations of like the same portrait of Napoleon, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah, and he was playing with like color in really interesting ways, and some of those.
Did you ever get to see his studio?
I did.
Yeah,
I got to see his studio, at least his studio in the Hamptons, because I went up to a party that he was having. This was a great party. I met Kurt Vonnegut at this party.
Wow.
Betty Friedan was at this party.
Wow.
Who wrote The Feminine Mystique. Larry, you know, Larry also played jazz. So he had like his jazz band there with him too.
That's amazing.
Everyone was getting high. And I was like, you know, I was like a young writer, like super I was like, fuck, this is incredible.
Uh-huh.
And
like
Kurt Vonnegut's like, yeah, give me some poems. And I gave him some poems. He's like, yeah, this is good.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was kind of wild.
That's incredible.
But who are some of your other people?
Definitely Francis Bacon.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, my work is nowhere near as like deconstructed and torn up as his is, but I think he's amazing. A lot of the kind of the sort of pre-impressionist painters like Corot and Manet, just like the quality of like their brushwork, I think, is just absolutely amazing. There's a painting at the Art Institute by Manet that's it's a huge painting, and it's Christ being bound before they put him up on the cross, and like it's the background's completely black, and there's these figures kind of around him, and everything about it seems staged, like the way that it's lighted, the way that they're dressed, like everything about it feels like really, really theatrical. And it's just like the it's like he's not even trying to be like, this is a religious painting. It's just like, no, this is just a painting of like some, you know, some people in a space interacting. And the brushwork is just perfection.
Yeah. I love Francis Bacon too. And mm-hmm. I see some of that. There is a real darkness to a lot of the work that I know of his.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say your work is dark. There's to me because it's melancholic maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you intend kind of an emotional tenor or how that enters in your process.
It's not really something I worry about. It's something that I kind of like just let happen. I'm really like kind of instinctive about the way I work. Like I rarely do any kind of preparatory sketches or anything. Most of the time it's just like, all right, I'm going to do this and just kind of like, you know, throw it down. And so it like the emotion that comes through is either, you know, like the expression of the figure or like, you know, kind of the mood I'm in when I'm working on it, you know, comes through. But I think, yeah, maybe melancholic, maybe a little like rather than like kind of like dark, like, you know, the kind of like serious darkness that Bacon has, I think I tend more to kind of like a like black comedy kind of thing, like,
yeah,
you know, like a little bit of silliness.
Yeah, well, right, because some of the positions, some of the characters or the figures, I guess, mm-hmm. in your work find themselves in it's kind of unclear, like,
yeah.
What the has
yeah.
happened. Yeah,
yeah. Sometimes it's a little vague exactly what's going on, and sometimes people are caught in awkward
yes.
positions.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you said you don't sketch too much.
No, not in preparation for paintings. I do with large ones that I'm going to be investing a lot of time in, but a lot of the smaller ones I do, the smallest that I do are like 6 by 6 inches, so they're really little. It's just kind of like, you know, just go out and see if it works.
So then what are you working from? You're working from memories or?
I work from found photos. Okay. So I'm not someone who can just like imagine something in my head and like put it down. Like I need to have visual reference. I for years tried to just work from live models, from the figure. I actually worked as a figure drawing model myself. It's really hard to get people to like come and model for you.
Yeah.
And modeling is really hard. Like holding a pose, like any pose, if you're holding it for 20 minutes, it's going to be uncomfortable. So I started working from my own photographs, but it's just really hard to like direct people and kind of get them to do the things you want to do. Like I was always very shy about it. So it's just kind of like take a bunch of pictures and hope that something works. I was in a like an antique store, and I found these old yearbooks, and it was really intriguing because for some reason they're from like the 40s, and for some reason they decided to include a bunch of hazing pictures, like these weird hazing rituals. Like there was one. It was a bunch of guys like in like, you know, like their underpants and naked other than that, kind of filing past hunched over and like two guys standing up and whacking them with cricket bats. And they put that in the yearbook. Like, why would you put that in the yearbook? And like other bizarre things like that. And so I started collecting those, and I was like, all right, you know, like, I think I need to use this for the source for what I work for. And, yeah, so, you know, started collecting yearbooks and, like, old photos and slides, discovered that I am not the only person who collects this stuff. There are a lot of amazing accounts on Instagram, on Tumblr, you know, people upload this shit, there's something about, like, photographs before people were really like conscious of being photographed, you know, like people would take pictures of really weird stuff, and like now everything's digital, you can erase it if you don't like it, you know, like everybody's tagging everybody, it's just like a very different thing, and people are really conscious of having a camera around them. But yes. In you know, in the 40s and 50s, like people took pictures of really weird stuff.
So that continues to be a basis for your inspiration.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're essentially kind of digging, like you're still going out. Where do you go? Not to give your sources away, but
there are a couple of really good antique stores in Chicago. There's one on Broadway. I'm forgetting what the cross street is, but like way up north on Broadway, in Edgewater, that's just generally like a great antique store, but it has a really good selection of just like, you know, just like plastic bins full of random photos. And like eBay, people will just put up and will be like, you know, like a lot of, you know, 500 35 millimeter slides from the 1960s, and like they don't even know what's on there, and you're like, all right. So
you
dig through a lot of really boring stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, landscapes and, you know, pictures of new cars and...
But what are you looking for when you're looking?
I mean, I'm looking for I'm looking for kind of two things. I'm looking for stuff that's like unusual and kind of like visually arresting, I look for stuff that kind of feels like kind of personally autobiographical. You know, like I don't really paint people that I know anymore, but there'll be times when like I'm doing a painting and it's like, oh, well, you know, like this is so-and-so, this is this person. Like it's just kind of like how I feel about that image, that like it is someone that I actually know.
Yeah. And so I know you have the gig as a sommelier, mm-hmm. but what is your process, practice like? Are you in a studio? Do you come to it daily? How are you making?
Yeah, so I just have my studio is just in my apartment, and I try to work every day. My job, part of what's great about it is that it's just 4 days a week, and it's daytime. So, you know, like I get out of work, I go home, and like I have time to work, and then I have 3 solid days off that I can just dedicate to painting. So it's a really nice balance.
That's great. Yeah. And what are the things that you're working on now?
Right now, was kind of weird because I have a solo show at Illinois Wesleyan, which is my first solo show. So
wow,
yeah,
congrats.
So it's kind of
when
it's up right now.
It's up right now.
Yeah, through I think March 4th.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
good. What is the title?
Ranch style house.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, congratulations.
Kind of house I grew up in.
Yeah, that's not that far.
It's Bloomington Normal.
Yeah, yeah, so. Hour and a half?
Like hour and a half, 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I had like all of these paintings in my studio, and like now they're all gone. It feels so empty. So just kind of, you know, working and stuff. Hoping this year to have my first solo show with my regular gallery, which is ZG in River North, which is a really, really great gallery.
And how long have you been working with them?
About a year. Okay. Yeah. So been in a couple group shows with them. I think I still have work up in a group show. I think that's still up. It's called Four Women. They have up currently.
Okay. And then maybe there'll be a solo show there for you this year in 20 or
possibly year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Haven't nailed it down, but
okay. Yeah. Good. And so now that you have this big body of work that's outside of your house in the world,
mm-hmm.
do you work in a different mood on a different body of work? What, like where are you at now with all of the stuff that is outside?
Well, I'm really bad about having like a planned out body of work. I tend to just kind of work on one piece of the next, or have a couple of things going that I'm kind of like bouncing back and forth between. But part of like not really making preparatory sketches, like I don't really have like, okay, this is my plan for a show, this is what I'm going to do. Like some artists are really, really organized about it, and I'm just completely haphazard. So it's like, oh, I'm going to do this, or I don't like this. But I have done a lot of smaller work, partially because I can do it quickly and just kind of get the ideas out there, and partially because I found that, you know, the small stuff sells. Yeah, the big paintings, it's, you know, it's harder to move stuff when once you're charging, you know, more and more and more for it. And if you keep it in, you know, a couple hundred dollars, then
it's a more affordable range. Do you like working larger scale, though?
I do. I like working either really small, so like the biggest of the small ones I do are like, you know, like 12 by 12 or like, you know, like 9 by 12. And then I'll do like, you know, like a 3 foot by 4 foot canvas. So that's kind of what I have going on right now. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Good. Well, again, one more time, if you can give out your socials so people could not only see what you're working on, but also stay in tune with shows and shows you have coming up.
So Instagram, it's Kirsten Valentine, just one word. And then my website is www.kirstenvalentine.com.
Yeah, Kirsten, this has been a really lovely conversation for me. I love art, and I don't get to talk about Francis Bacon and Cezanne on the daily. So thank you so much. And again, we're big fans of yours in the Corner Store. And so when you do have that solo show in Chicago, please come back so we can let folks know.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official Corner Store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the Snack Door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the Corner Store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.